Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host of the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast and the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement. Today, I will give a viewer discretion as advised due to the nature of the topics that we'll be discussing. Today, I am joined by my friend and an incredible author, a fellow LGBTQ plus community member, Envy. Welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
I am so incredibly honored and excited to sit down and talk with you today because you bring energy, you bring inspiration, you bring just your whole self to everything that you do. It is so incredibly inspiring, so beautiful to see. And I would love to just jump right in and walk us through who you are. Walk us through the work you do, and we'll go from there. Sound good?
Sounds great. Well, thank you. That's quite an introduction and quite a nice thing to say. Like, I definitely, am one of those people that everything I do is for this community. My wife likes to joke around a lot that I have six jobs and maybe get paid for one. So very much like I do a lot of things. I wear a lot of hats. And it's all for this community, trying to, fight for our rights, fight for visibility, our authenticity, and, just giving a platform for people to learn. My biggest thing is, like, as an educator, is this idea that I want to be that person that can answer all the questions and be that trans person people think of. That way, any other trans person out there doesn't have to be. They can just be their regular selves. They can be a computer programmer. They can be a firefighter. They can just be themselves and not have to be the one to answer those questions. And so very much that's at the heart of what I do. I wrote a book called The Queer Allies Bible, which is just this kind of like all-encompassing resource for people on how to be an ally, especially in this climate that we're in now, how to answer the tough questions, how to deal with homophobia and transphobia, how to, speak up and use your individual voice, your unique, beautiful voice for this community. And it's intertwined with, my personal narrative as well as narratives from other people within the community. Some a trans teenager, an asexual person, a bisexual person living in a heterosexual relationship. All of these types of stories are involved in there to help you understand what it really is like to be queer and what you can do as a cisgender heterosexual ally to make sure that we are here tomorrow. And that's the big thing. And so, yeah, I mean, besides that, I am a teacher. So I teach at the Columbus College of Arts and Design as an adjunct professor of photography. I am a photographer, and a public speaker, travel the country with a bunch of different things from different projects to my book to just different lectures and whatnot. But yeah, I do a lot of things and wear a lot of hats.
You do. And along with that, you have a very impressive resume that includes, contributing writer to periodicals such as the Buckeye Flame, Ohio Capital Journal, 614 Magazine, and Columbus Underground. What got you into writing? Because obviously there's so many stories to share. There's so many, aspects that go into telling a story. But what was that like beginning moment for you? Think back to like writing your first article, like your first. Just writing like the first thing that you ever did. What got you into
Yeah,
that?
so this is something that if you knew me back in high school or in college, and you were now like, hold on, you're a writer, you have every right to question this because I was atrocious at writing, like horrible. My wife had to edit my papers, had to make sure everything sounded right, spelling was right, grammar was right. Like, basically, it was this idea that, now I understand that I have ADHD. I've got a nice spicy mind. And without the medication, I was unable to, take the thoughts that are in my head and actually get them down on paper. And ever since I was able to have be on this medication, I found this clarity to be able to like actually take what is in my head and put it out there. And it's been wonderful both for my public speaking and for my writing and all this stuff. But yeah, my first article, it was kind of just like a, we were seeing this start of this rise of anti-trans, anti-queer legislation here in Ohio. This was probably about 2 or 3 years ago that we were really starting to see a lot of these bills start to be introduced. And I was very much trying to get out there this idea that like this is dangerous. This is look at what this can what can happen if we allow this to continue, if we allow this to normalize. And unfortunately, we're at this place now where this is all normal. Sad to say, but very much I just thought that I could speak my mind and hopefully someone would listen. And as I kept doing it, I kept getting more offers to, add different op-ed pieces, to get paid to do different stuff. I think one of the best articles I've written was for the Buckeye Flame, was about, what was it, about this time last year at the Grove City Pride Festival here in Central Ohio. We had a Nazi party show up, like full on in the Nazi regalia, waving their flags, being armed, and they were marching around the Pride celebration, trying to, incite fear and hatred and all this stuff. And I wrote this article on what it was like to stand there, being on the, the parasol committee, being the ones that are basically making the wall, and standing there looking into the eyes of hatred, looking into their eyes, and me not backing down, me saying, this is who I am. I'm going to stand strong. I'm going to protect those behind me. And just, I came home from that incident and wrote this article, and it was one that I've really found to be really moving and one that I was very proud of. So, yeah.
You want to know the first article that I read from you?
What's that?
So the headline, it was actually in the Buckeye Flame, because I follow them on social media. Don't ask why, I just do. I live here in
Everyone
Kansas.
should. The Buckeye Flame is amazing. They keep
Yes.
getting nominated for awards, and they keep
Yes.
growing, and it's incredible.
Yes.
Absolutely love everything they do. But yes, go on. Sorry.
No, you're absolutely right. I agree. Everybody absolutely needs to follow them on social media, and they're all over the place. They're on LinkedIn, they're on Instagram, they're on Twitter slash X, they're on Facebook, they're on TikTok, they're on Blue Sky. They're literally everywhere, and it's meeting the current moment. And the headline that I read of yours was, "Don't Let Them Dim Your Sparkle. Ohio's Damian Cerrato
Ah.
Inspires as Mixed Trans USA 2024." That was the first article that I read from you. And
Yes.
it introduced me to doing more thorough research on you. And I read it, and I've read a lot of your articles, and it's so deeply inspiring. I have a story about a supposed LGBTQ journalist, but that's a different topic for a different episode because it's a very horrific horror story. A lot of people in the LGBTQ community trusted this person, and it's a
I know
whole.
exactly who you're talking about.
Yep. So we'll do another follow up because I have a whole story about that. And but this was the first article that I read by you, and it's so deeply inspiring. You did a phenomenal job on this. And I want to kind of pivot to like a current moment, and then we'll kind of dive back into like your story and kind of like structure that. But I do want to make everybody aware that the Supreme Court is currently hearing arguments in a case challenging a Colorado ban on conversion therapy for minors, with the majority of justices appearing skeptical of that ban, which I use ban very skeptically because it's more of like a restriction for those licensed mental health professionals. The counselor, Kaylee Childs, is arguing that the law violated her First Amendment right to free speech by restricting her voluntarily talk therapy. Colorado officials contend the ban regulates a harmful and discredited practice, not just speech. Major medical and mental health organizations have, essentially debunked conversion therapy. And as somebody who went through it for 2.5 years, I'm living proof that, hey, still here, still queer, and I'm not going anywhere. It failed. It is literally pseudoscientific, and it does more harm than it does good. Statistically speaking, LGBTQ youth that are forced into conversion therapy are 4 times more likely to attempt or die by suicide. It's a very alarming statistic as set forth by the Trevor Project. You can fact check it however you want to do it. It's a very alarming thing that still is legal in majority of the states across the US. And if this Supreme Court rules, it will literally wipe out all of that progress that we made in protecting LGBTQ plus youth, including what I did in Kansas City back in 2019 on the local municipality level, where we passed a unanimous ordinance that was voted in unanimously. I remember thinking back to that and thinking that, okay, no other child is going to have to go through what I went through. Disclaimer, I wasn't forced into it by my parents. I went through it because society told me something was wrong with me. I needed to change myself. So just wanted to throw that part in there, that this does set a dangerous precedent in the country by
Oh my
saying,
gosh, yes.
we don't see you as a human being. You don't belong in our communities. I'm here to say, until you have a court determine your future, do not tell me that my opinion is invalidated. I have a legit reason. And, my mom's and other people's healthcare decisions by Roe v. Wade came under fire. Abortion access in the United States, especially for survivors of sexual and gender-based violence and rape, we keep going backwards. It seems like every time we take steps forward, we take 10 steps back. Now, your book, The Queer Allies Bible, is a detailed description of how to be a better ally, how to be supportive of people outside of you. And this is like one of those step outside the box moments. And I'm in awe. But I would love to learn about more of your story, where you were, where you are now, where you're headed. Walk us through your journey. And I know that you wrote a letter to your younger self, which we'll read here in just a little bit. But first, let's backtrack and let's talk about who you were, who you are now, and where you're headed.
Yeah, wow. I mean, it's been a long journey. I mean, this is year 7 since I came out. So I came out in December 18th of 2018, and that was after spending months in therapy for anger issues and realizing that my anger was not just, mad about stupid little things that were going on, but more mad about myself, more mad about like not being able to be who I am. And I remember in the therapy session with like a minute to go, I was just talking and, trying to wind out the clock and whatnot. And I kept hearing in the back of my head my wife's voice saying, "Tell her, tell her, tell her." And so for my therapist, I was just like, finally got my this voice and just like, fine, fuck it, I will go ahead and tell her. And I told my therapist at that time, it's like, sometimes I feel like I want to be a woman and I want to, but I don't want to always be a woman. Like, I want to be a woman sometimes, a man sometimes, and sometimes something else in between. And she just looked at me and I was like, well, okay, it's now time to go. And as I walked up and she grabbed my arm, she's like, sit your ass back down. We're gonna talk this out. And we spent the next hour and a half talking about what I meant by that and came to this understanding that what I was talking about is this idea of gender fluidity. And very much, I came home, I sat my wife down and I came out to her because my wife is my best friend and I have to tell my wife everything. Like, we can't keep secrets from each other. And so very much she struggled with it for about 2 years, trying to understand her role in it, how this shifts everything. Because it wasn't just, I'm changing genders, but now it's almost like her sexuality is changing. And especially how it's perceived by the outside world. And so very much we went through a 2-year period of trying to figure things out. And Once we got to a point where, she was like, yes, I fully embrace this. This is, you are the person I married. I don't care that it's, you're not a man anymore. Like, whatever this is, it's all, I'm all in. And she actually gave me a little diamond engagement ring to symbolize that, which is wonderful. But yeah, as I continued to grow and evolve, one of the things that I kept thinking back to was, that time when I came out was, how could I help someone in that process? We talk about this idea of coming out, or as I like to call it, letting someone come into your life. And we talk about how to do it, all the steps, but we don't necessarily talk about how to do it from the person receiving the news, receiving the information. And I thought back to, how my wife received that. And the first thing she did is she ran off to the library and checked out every single book that she could. She got books on being trans, she got books on being queer, being gay, all this stuff. But the one thing she couldn't find was a book on what she needed to be. And very much, and that's what motivated me into writing my book, is because, there's so much education out there for us within the community. There's so many scientific research studies, there's so many articles, there's so many books, there's so many everything, right? But there's not a lot from the ally perspective. And so very much that's what I set out to do, was this idea that, I can use my background as a teacher. So before I transitioned, I was a middle school teacher and high school cross country and track coach. And so I'm like, I can use my background as a teacher to help educate those people who we really need to be on our side. I can provide the education, and I have talks all the time with people who are, talking about coming out or thinking they might be gay or thinking they might be trans, and how do you do this stuff? I have those conversations, but more importantly, the talks that I do and the sermons, the lectures, all these things that I do are this idea of, like, how can you, as a cisgender heterosexual person, how can you understand our community? How can you be embraced in our community? And what do you need to do to earn that title? One of the big things in my book that I'd say is that, an ally is not a title that you can bestow upon yourself. It is one that is given to you by your countless efforts and works over and over again by those within the community. I think that's a really strong message to hear, because so many people will, say, "Oh, you're supported by me, or you're accepted by me, or I'm an ally." But are you really? Are you using your voice? Are you standing up for this fight? And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to go out there and be an advocate in the way of, like, going down to the state house or having the signs or going out to the protests. That's one way of advocating. That is not the only way of advocating. What I very much stress is that being an advocate is meaning it's using your skills, whatever that is. So if you're someone who's a photographer, use your skills of a photographer to help empower the trans community, the queer community. Offer services directed towards them. If you're a computer programmer, help in that way. Like, there's so many different ways that you can be an ally and an advocate without necessarily having to march in a protest. I mean, very much, my wife is an introvert. She is one of the biggest allies that I know, but she will not go down to protest because that's just not her scene. She does not like being in that crowd. She doesn't like if it's a lot of people, she's not going to be there. And so very much, like, it's this idea of just use your skills to help empower this community. And as I developed this mindset and wrote this book, it really helped project me into this light of, how do I see myself in my transition? How do I see myself as a person? Especially in a world now that is telling us that we are not valid, that we are mentally deranged, we are mentally ill, we need to be locked up, we need to be exterminated. I mean, those calls are coming from everywhere. And how can I stand strong? How can I show that that's not going to knock me down? And, very much, one of the things that really helped was actually the letters from Birmingham jail. Dr. Martin Luther King's, letters, and talking about this idea of like, what does it mean to face such hatred and to do it in a way that showcases what we are fighting for, why we are so worthy. And I have to commend the people, especially the people of Portland, and how they have done this, how they have continued to stand up and fight without violence, without giving this administration what they want. And very much that's what I continue to do with my voice, is this idea of like, I'm not going to give people the satisfaction of hearing me, get mad and get angry and get violent about this type of stuff. I'm going to stand up here and showcase that what I am doing is for everyone. It's not just for the trans people. It's not just for the queer people. It's for everyone. A lot of my community members will ask me a lot, why, how can I call myself a Christian? Christianity is most often targeted, like used as a weapon against our community. And very much I stand here as a proud Christian, and I stand here as someone who, delivers sermons from time to time and writes in periodicals for, different religious things. And so, like, how can I, accept this? And very much it's the idea that I don't believe that, what the Bible says is divine law. It's written by man. It's been interpreted by man. It's been written by the rich men of the world for thousands of years. What matters is how to live your life, the lessons from Christ, how to live your life like that. And, taking inspiration from not just figures in the Bible, but figures from in the Torah, from the Quran, from different religious texts from all over the world, and seeing this idea that we live for each other, or we're meant to help uplift one another, not to put each other down. And yeah, I think that's basically kind of talking about how I've got to where I am.
Speaking of bringing people together, understanding community, you created a project. So, speaking of photography, because you are a photographer, as you stated, This Is Trans, you created
Yes.
in 2022 as a way to bring visibility and awareness to transgender people of all forms. What was that like creating that project? You photographed some, I'm imagining you photographed some like incredible human beings. But what was that like for you? Because that is a way of shining a light. Every year, every November, we do Trans Day of Remembrance, and I've attended those events for many, many, many years. And I met an incredible human being at one of the rallies in Kansas City, which is Debbie Jackson, and incredible trans ally. Her daughter is trans. She was on the cover of National Geographic. But what was this project like for you, and walk me through the creative process of that?
This project was everything. So I had done a couple, gallery projects before and shown work and whatnot, but this project was born out of, so back in 2022, I was being attacked by members of my own community online, because at this time I was in my journey. I was not on hormones yet. I was still fit, still, navigating life, doing my transition as I saw was best for me. And, I talk with a deeper voice. I don't necessarily feminize my voice. I tried. I didn't like it. I didn't like how I sounded. So I went back to what I am. And I used they, sh at the time was using they, them pronouns, now they, she pronouns. And, I was getting attacked by a lot of the, trans women who are passing, the ones that are basically recloseting themselves in a cisgender world. And they were telling me how I was not trans enough. I was not valid. I was damaging the community. I was making it harder for everyone. And I kept thinking, like, I can take these attacks. I can fight these attacks off. But there are so many of my siblings that can't. There are so many who are just beginning off, or just are having dealing with mental health issues, dealing with things that make hearing stuff like this heartbreaking, makes it devastating. I'm like, no, this isn't right. I'm gonna fight this. And so at the time, that's what I chose to do, was like, I'm gonna use what I'm doing to fight back against this notion. And so I created this is Trans project, where we started out with 75 participants from all around the, like, we were going to just start here in Ohio, but very quickly it grew. We ended up having kind of, we've had people from every state in the United States. We've had people from all over the world come out to participate in this, and it's very much been a wonderful project. I mean, what started with 75 photos for the first one has now ballooned to well over 300 photos, and it still grows. I still get people that contact me that want to be a part of this project. It is completely free for, trans people to come have a photo shoot with me, get to know me, have that time, and, be part of this project. And one of the beautiful things that I did with this is all the pictures are candid. They're not staged. Nothing is staged. When I'm taking photos with these individuals, what I'm wanting to do is I want to make it so that the viewer of the photo feels like they're getting to know the person without seeing their name, without learning their history. And they just see this photo and they can feel like they know this person. And that's been a big draw for me from a lot of my photography. And so, yeah, very much like these portrait sessions, I spend time getting to know each person, putting them in a situation that is comfortable for them. A lot of the time we do photos out in nature or out in a spot that is meaningful to them. And then as well, when I finish editing the photos, I actually have them choose their photo. Because one of the things that, I've been in some projects from other artists before, and I never liked this idea that the artist just gets to choose what they want to put up there of another person. Like, because I went to one gallery where an artist did this, and I absolutely hated the picture they chose of me. I hated it. I thought it was just a horrible, portrayal of who I am. And so in this project, each person chooses their photo. I want them to feel euphoric. I want them to feel like, yes, this is who I am. That way there isn't that disappointment when they see their photo come out, that they feel like they're putting their best foot forward. And that's huge when this travels the country, when there's a coffee table book which contains every single portrait available for purchase. Like, that's huge that they feel empowered by their photograph. And so, yeah, we're still, I've kind of taken a back burner on it a little bit with the Queer Allies Bible, but we're starting to pick it back up. I just got contracted to come out to San Diego State University in March to show the project and to photograph out there to have more participants. So we're still doing it, and yeah, it's just been wonderful.
You are one of the biggest inspirations to me, and I hope you realize that because I sit here listening to this and I'm like, oh my God, this is incredible. And whenever we think of like icons within the community, we think of Sylvia Rivera, we think of Marsha P. Johnson, we think of Harvey Milk, we think of, all these legendary people. But we have legendary people within our communities, and you're definitely one of them that I look up to. And another one is, like, you're speaking of Ohio, I think of Michael Knode, the founder of Have a Gay Day from Dayton,
I love
Ohio.
Michael. I love Michael. Big hug for Michael.
He is one of the most inspiring and incredible human beings literally ever. And then I also think of, allies like Aaron Jackson, creator of Planting Peace, AKA also creating the Trans House and the LGBTQ House, the Pride House, across the street from one of the most hateful, notorious churches in the United States, the Westboro Baptist Church. Now, I live just an hour north of where the Westboro Baptist Church is in the Kansas State Capitol, or by the Kansas State Capitol. And I remember going down there a couple years ago for the very first time, and I still have the picture and I reflect on it. And I remember seeing that for the first time while standing in the middle of the road, you know, on your, well, if you drive, depending on which way you drive in, it's either on the left or it's on the right, whichever way you drive in. But one side of the road, you see hate. The other side of the road, you see love. And it really puts things into perspective that it's not just a two-way street. It's just, it's so complex about what clear joy looks like. I've been with my partner for 7 years. We're a Tinder success story. And I remember meeting her, and she was going through a lot. You know, she just moved, she just graduated high school, or just graduated high school, and then she went to college. I met her as she was getting ready to graduate from college. And then she started going to school, and she became very depressed. She became very suicidal. She became very, you know, I went down, I told my mom, I was like, okay, I'm gonna go visit, you know, former name. I won't obviously dead name her, but went down, visited her, and walking into that apartment, I was like, holy shit, what did I just walk into? Because I mean, there's like trash everywhere. There's like the litter box hasn't been changed. And then it's just like, oh my God, what in the hell did I just walk into? Fast forward, you know, I stayed down there for a week, and I called my mom, and I was like, I have to bring her back with me, because if I don't, she's not going to be alive. And she was so incredibly depressed. And I just think about that. And then I brought her back up here, or brought her up to, you know, my home. And she began going to therapy. She got on HRT. She got her gender marker and her name changed. And there's like a whole like 360 in her. You know, she got a full-time job. She became a pharmacy technician. She worked in the pharmacy for close to 3 years, and she got burnt out, and now she's working in fast food. And it's definitely like a switch for her, but it's so much less stressful for her. You know, she helps me run this movement. She is one of my co-founders of the Rise Above Justice movement, and she'll eventually be coming in as a co-host. We got some major projects coming up, so stay tuned. But I would love to pivot over to the letter that you wrote to your younger self. Are you ready
Oh,
to read that?
yes. Oh, my goodness. Yes, this letter. So when you told me about this and you're like, I want you to read something, I was like, oh, all right, like let's do this. I sat down and start writing it, and it was a hard thing to write. It's because it's something that I wish I could actually go back and give to myself. Like it's I'll just read it. You can let me know your thoughts about it, but this is a letter to the myself the day I came out. Dear Natasha, first off, congratulations on coming out today. You showed incredible courage and strength in finally allowing yourself to open up and speak honestly about the questions that have nagged you for most of your life. That boy who stayed awake at night pleading and bargaining with God to allow him to spend one day as a girl will finally be able to live authentically. While this is such a joyous moment in your life, I do wish to share with you the journey that lies ahead. In the days, months, and years to come, much will change. You will lose the job that you love. You will be cast out from most of your family. You will be challenged in ways that will force you to contemplate your life. While it might sound as if your decision to come out was not the right one, I assure you that it is. For while you will lose a lot from your life, what you will gain will be far greater than anything lost. You will gain a chosen mother who loves you unconditionally. You will create a deeper and more loving relationship with the woman of your dreams. You'll pursue a career that allows you freedom and creativity. You'll develop a voice that inspires thousands. You will achieve things that you never believed possible. You will live as the amazing and beautiful human that you had begged God to become. Hold true to yourself, for you have taken the first steps on a long road towards true happiness. With love, your future self.
Damn, somebody's chopping onions. Because so reading that now and thinking about where you are now, thinking about your past experiences, thinking about everything, how are you feeling? How do you feel at this very moment?
You know, I have gone through a lot in these 7 years, a lot more than I thought I would ever go through, and a lot that has made it feel like 27 years, to be completely honest. There have been a lot of joy and euphoria, and there's been a lot of hardship and loss and pain. And when I sit here now and talk with you and talk and just embrace myself for who I am, I can't help but smile. You know, everything that I've gone through has led me to this point, has led me to being where I am. And, you know, am I financially successful? No. Am I still, you know, a middle class person struggling paycheck to paycheck? Sure. But I'm happy and finally free. You know, before 2018, when I was sitting around and I had, you know, more financial freedom and less stress and all this stuff, I felt angry all the time. Felt like I was carrying this weight on my shoulders that I could never lift off. And now that weight isn't there. You know, what's here is just euphoria about being able to be who I am. And it's far better. I mean, my wife and I are high school sweethearts. I've known her since middle school. We got married in 2014. She did not marry into this idea that I'm trans, because at that time I had no idea. But what I can say is that our relationship, our marriage is so much stronger now. It's so much better. It's so much loving. I mean, even our intimacy is better. Like, everything is better because not because of, you know, changes to my body or changes to her body or changes to anything else. It's because I'm finally happy. And that's just amazing. Everyone should be able to experience that joy of just pure happiness with who you are. And it's something that I fight for everyone. I want people to feel the same way that I feel about myself. And I hope one day we finally get to that point.
God, you know, I wish nothing more for anybody else, and you know, I'm so grateful that I am where I am today, because I think if I wouldn't have went through what I did, I honestly don't know if I would give a damn about what's happening now, because I never got on social media, I never paid attention to the news. It's like, oh, it doesn't affect me, doesn't affect me, doesn't affect me. It's kind of like how a lot of people are now. Let's be real. But I cannot sit on the sidelines anymore. And I knew I had to do something. And whenever I think of, you know, horror stories and lives that were cut extremely short at the hands of somebody else, I think about Matthew Shepard. Today is October 13th. It is 2 days after National Coming Out Day, which I came out. Would have been October 11th of 2012, or my sophomore year of high school. Back then, I didn't know it was National Coming Out Day. I had no idea. I wrote a 5.5-page suicide note to my mom. I explained to her how I was feeling. I explained to her what I was going through, how I was experiencing everything. And, you know, we still talk about the note from time to time because It does show how far I've come in my own journey. But I think about Matthew Shepard, and I remember traveling to Denver, Colorado in 2016. I met Judy and Dennis Shepard, which is Matthew Shepard's parents. And I accepted the Spirit of Matthew Award from the Matthew Shepard Foundation. And hearing the words from Dennis that I, me, myself, and I embody exactly what his son believed in. Hearing those words from Dennis Shepherd meant the entire world to me. I remember walking on stage, I remember speaking, and there was somebody that was sitting in the front row that I remember watching on TV, which was Sean Hayes, aka Just Jack from Will and Grace. Now, was I a big fan of the show? I wouldn't necessarily say I was a big fan of the show, but I knew about it. And but I did know about him. And that day I met some incredible human beings, but you could feel the spirit of Matthew in the room. You could feel it. I was that spirit because it was, a lot of what Matthew believed in, based on what I've heard from his parents and his friends, because I've talked to several of his friends that he grew up with. October 6th was a detrimental day, and not only in their lives, but in the country, because the news broke that an American student at the University of Wyoming was beaten, tortured, and left to die near Laramie, Wyoming on October 6th of 1998. And he was transported by rescuers to to a hospital in Fort Collins, Colorado, where unfortunately, October 12th, 1998, 6 days later, he died from severe head injuries sustained during the attack. Aaron McKinney and Russell Henderson were arrested shortly after the attack and charged with first-degree murder following Shepard's death. Henderson pleaded guilty to murder, and McKinney was tried and found guilty of murder. Each of them received two consecutive life sentences. McKinney's defense counsel at that time had began countering, the argument that he intended only to rob Shepard, but he killed him in rage when Shepard made, quote unquote, a sexual advance toward him, which he actually later lied about and recanted.
The gay panic and trans panic defense.
Yes, and that's actually gonna be my next question. I want to ask you, how we can advocate directly for that. Now, in October 2009, the United States Congress passed the Matthew Shepard and James Byrd Jr. Hate Crimes Prevention Act, commonly known as the Matthew Shepard Act or the Shepard-Byrd Act. And on October 28, 2009, President Barack Obama signed the legislation into law. They established, after the murder of Matthew Shepard, Dennis and Judy became LGBTQ rights activists and established the Matthew Shepard Foundation. And there's been a lot of works, including the Laramie Project, which is a 2000 play and 2002 film. And then Judy Shepard wrote the 2009 memoir, The Meaning of Matthew. I just remember hearing the story in school. And it wasn't from a teacher, it wasn't in the curriculum, but one of my teachers told me about it. And it opened my eyes a lot. And I asked my mom, I was like, "Do you remember the story of Matthew Shepard?" And she said, "Yes, I do." She said, "Yes, I do. We all do." It was a very, it was horrible to hear. And his dad spends a lot of time in Saudi Arabia. He was working with an oil and natural gas company that's out there and spent a lot of time out there. And I just, yeah, I think about Matthew Shepard on a daily basis. And I think about what he would be doing now, who he would be. But then I come across people that just inspire me beyond belief, and maybe you were definitely one of those people. Now, thank you for reading your letter. That meant the entire world to hear and hear you say it so authentically. I think that's the most beautiful part about all of it. But pivoting and, thinking about the gay trans panic defense and how it is still legal in over half of the states in the country.
35, 35
Yes.
states to be exact.
Yes. Which is, that's insane to me. So, thinking about your ally Bible and thinking about, the work that's happening in like the workplaces and legislatures, communities, social media, what can we do to better advocate for our communities? Because we know that change cannot come unless we advocate within our own community. Because there are still some, you mentioned it earlier, that there's still some people within these communities that continue to perpetuate violence towards others because you're not this, you're not that, you're not this too much, you're not that too much. Like, how do we combat that and fight back against that? I know the answer, but I would like for you to answer that. And from your perspective, and I obviously have my own opinion, but let's see how we
It's
can
a
be.
great question. Because right now it seems like anything that is being done is falling on deaf ears. And I think that's the problem, is that there are a lot of deaf ears when it comes to us. And I think back to the civil rights movement and what caused the civil rights movement to finally actually gain momentum. It was when the hosing down of protesters and peaceful marchers was broadcast on national TV. So people in, Bumfucksville, North Dakota couldn't ignore it anymore. They couldn't say it doesn't happen in their neighborhood because they're watching it. They're seeing the horrors that happened. And unfortunately, that's probably what it's going to take. It's going to take the horrors to be shown, to be put out there, to be showcased. And I hate saying that because I don't want to see any of my siblings get put into harm's way, even though we're still having siblings, in harm's way today. Unfortunately, there will be a lot of names that we have to read in November, and each one will be more devastating than the last. But it comes from this mindset that we can't wait on the media to showcase this. We're seeing that they're not going to. We can't wait on social media. We see that they're not going to. We have to put the we have to take it in our own hands to go out there and showcase what is actually happening, proclaim what is happening, and making sure that this cannot just be swept under the rug. And I hope that no one has to be put in that situation where they're beaten or killed just because of who they are. And I mean, it makes me think of my own instance with, this the fear and the notion of someone looking to abuse. But yeah, I wish more people would finally pay attention and would finally listen and hear our voices and hear what we are saying and take it for the God honest truth that it actually is. We're not making these stories up. We're living this stuff. We are all fearing tomorrow. Let me say that again. We are fearing tomorrow. That's never how we should live. No one should have to live that way.
One of the names that we'll be reading next month is Sam Nordquist. And this case, I will bear the details because it is very horrific. What happened in room
Horrible.
22 in New York, in Western New York, it is a very devastating story. And on a future episode, I have connected with the mother and the sister of Sam Nordquist, and we'll be sitting down talking about Sam. And Sam, for those of you who do not recognize the name, Sam Nordquist was a 24-year-old transgender man from Red Wing, Minnesota, who was murdered and tortured in Hopewell, New York. And he was tortured for over a month. And She had been tortured between December 2024 and February 2025 before being murdered, according to a police news release on February 14th, 2025. The motive is currently under investigation, but there is several people that are involved in it, upwards of 7 to 8 people that tortured him and brutally murdered him. That unfortunately will be one of the names that we'll be reading in November during Trans Day of Remembrance. My mom's been to a couple of the events with me too, and it's one of the most sombering events that I'll probably ever attend, and it's always cold as hell too. But and you always feel like this breeze that just comes, just like letting us know that they're there, you know, because legends never die. And you know, with that, I want to say thank you for, first of all, for being you, being authentic, being the voice to be reckoned with, being this force to be reckoned with. Everything that you do, just know that you have me in your corner. You have so many others that are cheering you on, that are celebrating you, embracing you, and uplifting your voice, because you have a voice that is so needed in this world that unfortunately a lot of our community members will never hear, because they have either died by suicide or they have been murdered, or they were forced to go back into something, to this alternate reality that they never wanted to be a part of, which unfortunately is, you know, going back into the closet because it's not safe. And I always joke that I spent too much time in the closet. I'm not going back, but I can't lie and say that there weren't times that I felt like I needed to change who I was. And I just feel there's certain times, you know, scrolling through social media and you see Westboro Baptist Church and they're telling you know, you're going to hell, you're going to hell. There's only so many times that you can hear something before you begin to believe it. And I was forced to believe that. And I will say that my mom has been my rock since day one. She got me the help that I needed, and she's been there as a supportive ear, and I am beyond grateful that I have that, because I know so many do not. And I know that that's an unfortunate reality, and you know, I'm grateful, but I'm also grateful for people like you that continue to uplift and continue to inspire the most marginalized voices, because that's who needs the help right now. So.
Said we have all faced these hardships. We have all faced our own unique ones. And one of the things I always tell people is don't diminish what you've had to go through. You don't need to be raped to feel like your stuff is valid, to feel like your hardships are valid. You don't need to be beaten. You don't need to be like there's not this standing of like, oh, well, yeah, you finally have reached the pinnacle of what it's like to be trans and the hardships we face. So here you go, you've earned it. No, like we all have our unique hardships that we go through. We all have our unique challenges. We've all struggled. We've all questioned. You said like you've questioned about, yourself and going back into the closet. We all have. We all have done that. Me now, I'm too big for the closet. I ain't going back in. I can't even fit. But like, it's foolish for us. Like I always, feel this imposter syndrome with my own self. And like, am I deserving of being able to have a voice? Am I deserving of being able to speak about this type of stuff? Because, I haven't been raped. I haven't been beaten. Now I've had very close calls, and I've had very harrowing experiences, and I've had other hardships that have left me suicidal, have left me going, having to be institutionalized. But I always question this, and it's one thing that we shouldn't question ourselves, shouldn't look to have to validate our own hardships because they are valid. What we've gone through to be ourselves is valid, and everything that we will do is valid. And I really want people to take that away because I do know that there are people that struggle with that fact, that struggle like that they can't speak out about what they've gone through because they don't feel like they've gone through enough, or they haven't gone through the worst of it, haven't gone through what they've read about. No, we've all gone through shit.
Absolutely. And is there anything else you wanted to talk about? Anything else you wanted to share with those who may be listening right now, beginning their journey?
I
Just
mean,
anything else, just anything else you wanted to share?
if this is your first time hearing my voice, then I'm so grateful for that. Those who have heard my voice before and have spoken to me know that I will talk forever. Very regularly, I tell people with when they hire me for public speaking stuff, it's like you need to give me what my time frame is, or you're going to have me up there for 3 hours, and I'm just going to talk. Like it's how it is. And it's going to be entertaining and it's going to be real. And I just, yeah, very much. It's what I like to do is I like to be this educator, but at the same time, I want you to feel like you can talk to me. You can reach out to me. So whether you're hearing my voice for the first time or you've read my book or you've seen my work, like reach out to me, please. The only thing I ask is don't, get on social media and just leave me a message that says hi. I don't respond to those. But you send me an email, get onto my website, mxgay.org. That's mxgay.org. Leave me a note. Schedule a time. I do a segment called Ask a Queer Question where you can set up an hour-long time to just Zoom with me. Ask your questions, talk with me. Like, I'm available and I'm wanting to hear your voice. I want to know your story. My story, I can tell it over and over again, but it doesn't change. I want to know your story. I want to know what you've gone through. I want to know how you got to where you are and how you became the amazing human that you are. And so please, please reach out and just talk to me.
Oh, I have chills. I do. I have chills. I definitely feel it. I want to say thank you for, what you do, and thank you for being who you are. And I know it's taken a lot of work to get to where you are now. I know it has. It's never easy, but what matters is you did it. And you have your wife. That sounds like an incredible human being, by the way. And I'm really
Oh,
excited.
she is.
I'm so incredibly excited to hear that. And just thank you for being you. Thank you for coming on the podcast too and being supportive, the Rise of Justice movement, because I couldn't do it without people like you that keep us going and keep the voices and the stories alive, even whenever they're no longer here. And I cannot thank you enough for that. Thank you.
I'm grateful that you are doing this and that you are out there, spreading the news, making sure people find it. Very much my wife and I talked about this. Like, she asked if I wanted to get into like journalism like this, and I'm like, hell no, I can't do this every single day. I have to be able to take a break. I cannot sit here and write about every single thing that goes on. Like, it's too much for me. So I'm so grateful for people like yourself who are doing that, who are sharing this news and, making sure that it's being seen. And it's a wonderful thing that you are doing. And thank you to everyone who's taken time out of their day to listen to me, listen to my voice and my story. And I hope that what some of the things I said tonight will help, help you out along your journey. Help you grow to understand the human race a little bit better and just be more loving to each other.
Absolutely. Envy, you have a great day. Okay.
Well, thank you. You too.
Thank you.